another in a series of executive orders that affects the way vendors sell to the federal government may be imminent. Pressure's mounting now on President Obama to act the same way he acted on the minimum wage contractors pay employees and the amounts contractors pay to men and women doing the same job. David Hawkins is senior editor at Roll Call. He's writing about the third area in his Hawkins Here blog. And, David, thank you for being on the program as always. It's good to have you on. You're calling this the federal contractor trifecta. Why is that, David?
Right. So when the year began, there was an expectation that all three of these things would happen in the absence of legislation. Right. The president said has been talking about we can't wait and we are going to he's going to do what he could to apply if not beyond federal contracts, then to at least to federal contractors, things that he couldn't get Congress to do his way nationwide. The $10 and 10 cent minimum wage, the pay equity thing, which is more limited. It just allows federal contractors to discuss their salaries openly without fear of being fired, which actually has a remarkable way of exposing pay inequities between men and women. And then the third one, which is what I'm writing about now, which is to codify for federal workers the legislation languishing in Congress, which is known as ENDA, which stands for Employment Non-Discrimination Act, which says that it is which would say, if it was enacted nationwide, it would be illegal to do any kind of job discrimination based on sexual orientation or gender identity. The president has not. The trifecta has only two of the three horses have come across, the minimum wage and the pay equity one, but the president has not signaled that he is going to do the ENDA executive order, and in fact, the White House a couple of weeks ago said that to do so would be redundant.
What's changed, though, because you write the Labor and Justice Department's reportedly signaled support for an executive order to that effect, as you just described, almost 2 years ago, a reelection campaign where he wants to try to win swing states that may lean more conservatives, probably not the way the time to do it, but he doesn't have to worry about that anymore.
He doesn't, but what he does have to worry about, which I ended up writing about because it was the best explanation I could get from the people I talked to, was he still has to worry about maintaining, or he thinks he has to worry about maintaining some level of trust and cooperation from Congress. And while, yes, some conservative Republicans are annoyed about the minimum wage move and about the pay equity move, the notion is that they would be doing the gay and lesbian job discrimination for ban would be one step too far, and that the Republicans who are already annoyed at his sort of what they call the imperial presidency move would be doubly infuriated, and this would poison the well, especially going into the midterm, and if the president wants to have any goodwill left at all with Republicans for his legislative program, he'd better not go this far before the election. Immigration comes up in these discussions. Some people still, there are some optimists who still think the president, if he shows restraint on these executive orders between now and the election, may still be able to work some sort of miracle on his immigration bill, maybe after the election in the lame duck session, but that there's no way that would happen, I'm told that there's no way this would happen if he signs this ENDA executive order.
I have a hard time imagining how he can do anything on immigration with Republicans in the Senate saying, why should we do anything that might mess up the possibility that we could take the chamber over?
Well, there's that. I mean, you know, there are some who are saying the only way this could get done is if in the lame duck session, through some miracle, and I think it would be a miracle. I mean, that's my own analytical construct, is that it would be a miracle. The House would take up and just take up as is the Senate bill, the very thing that John Boehner has been saying from the start there's no way he would do. Some would say it would cost him his speakership. Some are speculating that, who knows, maybe he doesn't want to be speaker. There's all kinds of rife speculation. This is more reporting on the speculation than reporting on what's actually going on, but that the only way that it could happen in the lame duck would be to actually send the president what the Senate passed and prevent any more back and forth.
Yeah, losing John Boehner's speakership from the buzz that I've been hearing lately might be the greatest thing that could happen, according to John Boehner.
Well, you mean he's tired of it? That's the I mean, there are some who think he's tired of it, but there are others who, I mean, you know, this is the great parlor game at the Capitol right now, is trying to understand what John Boehner's 2-year plan is. And I don't pretend to have the answer. I think you could argue it that he'll stick around for another 2 years until the end of the Obama presidency. And there are others who, I could also be persuaded by those who are convinced that he is going to hang up his speakership spurs after this election.
Well, it would be hard at this point, I think, to see him walking away from Congress, but certainly with some of the things that we've seen in not just in your paper, but all across the Hill, and things that that I hear from folks that I trust a whole lot more than I trust myself, he might not get much say in the matter. It might be something that somebody else decides.
Right. I mean, there is always. You know, ever since it was 20 years ago now, almost, I guess, what it was 1998, when there was nearly a coup against Newt Gingrich. None of us saw that coming. I except for some very smart reporters at a publication not our own who figured this out. But it was a huge surprise, and I don't think any of us are ever going to be fooled again. So we're all constantly asking every Republican that we meet, what's the palace intrigue. And there's no consistent storyline, which probably means there's no consistent storyline. There's no consistent move afoot. But in any case, that's pretty far down the road. And in the meantime, we're left with machinations about, you know, how much the president. I mean, really, this is going to come down to a year, I think, between now and the election, where it's going to be the appropriation bills, which we talk about so often, and almost nothing else. So that's why the president is being asked by advocacy groups all over town to take out his executive order form, his packet of executive orders, and fill them out.
David Hawkins is senior editor at Roll Call. His latest post is President Pressured to Use PAN for LGBT Workers on his Hawkins Here blog, and you can find the link at federalnewsradio.com/in-depth. David, another thing that you're writing about that I was shocked to learn, apparently there's lying in politics? I had no idea.
Yeah, me neither. I knew there was lying in politics. I didn't know there were laws against it. But incredibly, there are laws against it in about 15 states, including Ohio, and a challenge to Ohio's its illegal to lie in politics statute is going before the Supreme Court for oral arguments tomorrow morning. It's a fascinating case. A congressman who portrayed himself as a pro-life congressman in Ohio 4 years ago invoked this law to prevent a billboard from going up saying he was pro-abortion. He lost. This guy's name is Steve Driehaus. He lost anyway. So some would say this lawsuit should be tossed out by the Supreme Court as, you know, no longer ripe. Sort of it's a moot point. But others are pressing hard for the Supreme Court to say that laws against lying in politics, laws to prevent it, are lying in politics would be a violation of the First Amendment, and that. And just as it's okay to raise as much money as you want, and says the Supreme Court, in politics, it should be okay to say whatever the heck you want in politics.
I was surprised to read in this piece something that had nothing to do with the lying in politics. Former senator from Ohio, Mike DeWine, is still around. I had no idea.
Yeah, right. Who knew? So Mike DeWine, who, if you're a veteran of Washington.
Or a nerd like me.
Or a nerd like you, know who Mike DeWine is. Mike DeWine is now, he was a senator for 2 terms. He was a House member for a couple of decades. He's a fixture in Republican politics going back to the early 80s. He lost for the Senate and then went back to Ohio and got himself elected attorney general.
I don't know how I missed that.
And may, in fact, want to be governor in a few years and continue his comeback ride. So he has taken the unusual step of filing briefs to the Supreme Court arguing both sides of this case, which is a highly rare move, and maybe some would say the ultimate political move. And some would say that maybe since he's been a victim of the lying in politics in Ohio many times, in his view, and who knows, perhaps he's been come close to skirting the law himself a few times. Maybe that's why he can't figure out which side to be on.
But to me, that's just the ultimate irony, that he is filing briefs
on both
sides of a court case about lying in politics.
It is kind of...
How great is that?
Pretty great.
That's fantastic. you find the most interesting stuff, David. Thank you very much, as always.